2000 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, September the 18th, 2023. Weekend clashes in Khartoum destroyed some of the city's key landmarks.
For more than 5 months of fighting, we remained in Khartoum, but now we are thinking of leaving due to deterioration of health and livelihoods, besides lack of electricity and water.
And journalists in South Sudan complain of a repressive and intimidating media environment.
The quality of content is reducing. That is simply because of censorship and harassment. Most of the journalists decide to censor themselves because they fear harassment, they fear, intimidation and all those stuff.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We begin in Sudan, where civil society activists have condemned both the military and the rapid support forces for attacking essential installations in Khartoum over the weekend. Activists say both warring parties should avoid attacking essential institutions, which they say are the property of the Sudanese people. They reiterate their call on the military and the rapid support forces to seek peace and end the conflict in Sudan. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Clashes between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces continued in Khartoum over the weekend, with the sound of rockets and artillery in various parts of the capital. Eyewitnesses near the military headquarters reported hearing powerful explosions and observed smoke blowing into the sky on Sunday. Huge fires engulfed vital government buildings, including the Ministry of Justice, the Taxation Office, the Bureau of Standards and the Nile Petroleum Company, which are located in the heart of Khartoum. Omdurman resident Al-Sanusi Ahmed condemned the attack, saying attacking any public institutions is a crime. Ahmed told VOA via a messaging application that the recent attacks on other public buildings in Khartoum will lead to a deterioration of service delivery in the capital.
For more than 5 months of fighting, we remained in Khartoum, but now we are thinking of leaving due to deterioration of health and livelihoods, besides lack of electricity and water, and yet there is no government in place to maintain this.
Sudanese journalist Issa Dafalla, who fled violence from South Darfur State to Uganda a month ago, also condemned both the army and the RSF for attacking the public buildings. Dafalla told VOA continued destruction of public institutions and essential buildings could cause Sudan a lot of economic loss.
This is a big economic loss for the country, and due to this senseless war, both warring parties continued to attack hospitals, houses of civilians, and now they have included other essential government institutions.
Sudanese rights activist Salwa Said accuses former officials of the government of ousted President Omar al-Bashir of destroying what they built over the past 30 years. Said says the Islamists don't care about the fate of the country and its people, but only want to rule Sudan once again.
They do not care if they continue to destroy Sudan and its people, but their main objective is to return back to rule this country through any means.
VOA contacted Sudan Armed Forces spokesman Brigadier General Nabil Abdullah for comment on this story, but he did not respond to request. Speaking to VOA this past hour, Izzat Yusuf, the political advisor to the RSF commander, distanced the RSF from bombing public institutions, adding that his group does not own any war planes.
Bombing houses, ministries and now companies have involved the use of airstrikes. The RSF doesn't own any plane, and this is well known to everybody.
The United Nations reports that about 5.25 million people have had to leave their homes and flee to other locations within Sudan or in neighboring countries since the start of the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces in mid-April. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
South Sudan opposition alliance known as SOA are condemning the National Security Service for allegedly cancelling an event organized by the group over the weekend. SOA planned to welcome back SOA official Lama Kol, a senior member of the alliance and leader of the National Democratic Movement, after spending years abroad. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking to VOA today, Lama Kol says he cannot understand why security operatives would cancel his reception.
It were security personnel who came and stopped it. But under whose orders they were acting, this is what we are still investigating. Whoever did this is doing disservice to the narrative of that election should take place.
South Sudan is scheduled to hold elections in December 2024. But opposition politicians have complained about the shrinking political space. Akol says the decision by the National Security Service operatives to stop Saturday's events only confirms fears by many that the country is not ready for elections at the end of next year.
You know that there are many doubting Thomases and there are many skeptics who keep saying that there will never be a level space, there will never be a free political space. And such incidences tend to support their point of view.
Akol says SOA members will meet with President Salva Kiir to register their complaints about the restricted political space, which they say restricts other political parties from organizing and mobilizing supporters ahead of elections. Josephine Lago, chairperson of the alliance and head of the People's Democratic Movement, says she was surprised to see the event cancelled at the last moment.
As I was just preparing now to get ready to go to the venue, I started getting phone calls and then people started rushing to, you know, the house where I was, informing me that the national security were concerned. They were stopping people from entering.
Lago, who is also the National Minister of Agriculture and Food Security, says Saturday's function was meant to bring all SOA leaders and supporters to deliberate on their political future ahead of elections. She says the decision to cancel the event shows the environment is not conducive for holding elections.
Conducive environment means having the opportunity for all the parties that are going to contest, for them to have the opportunity to talk freely, for them to have the opportunity to associate like what we were planning to do on Saturday. So there has to be the freedom of parties to associate, to come together and debate and discuss and, you know, look into the issues that concern them in their country.
Repeated calls to John Kumuri, the National Security Service spokesperson, for comment were unsuccessful as his known cell phone numbers were switched off. Government spokesperson Michael McQuay says he's not aware of a political event that was stopped, but insists all political parties in South Sudan are free to hold political activities.
The political space is free, and this is why everybody is conducting his or her functions and duties. I have ever been repeating that we have an open political space. You can even see in the screen. We even send our own journalists to go and cover whatever function being conducted by any political party.
McQuay admits sometimes individual security operatives take the law into their hands and claim their individual action are being carried out under government orders. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Some media houses in South Sudan say reporting on sensitive topics like corruption or crime involving political or military leaders is a red line for journalists. One editor of a Juba radio station says whenever he has heard such reports, the station gets calls and texts from unidentified people threatening to kill reporters or close the station. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has the details from Bor.
John Ulu, the manager and chief editor of the Juba-based station Top FM, says most media houses have a hard time accessing in-depth news because of rampant censorship and harassment from security operatives.
Reporting security issues is a red line between us and the government. Number two is about corruption. These are the red line whereby if you report the corruption, you will not be safe. The other thing is the issue of raping and gender-based violence. This is a story. They put some female journalists into harassment directly and censorship.
Ulu says widespread censorship and harassment of journalists forces some reporters, who are overwhelmingly women, to abandon the profession. Josephine Ashiro, executive director for Community Media Network South Sudan, says when authorities do not uphold press freedoms enshrined in the constitution, it has a challenging effect on journalism.
The quality of content is reducing. That is simply because of censorship and harassment. Most of the journalists decide to censor themselves because they fear harassment, they fear, intimidation and all those stuff. So everyone now decides to pick a soft angle. Like when you are going to write a story, you make sure you pick an angle that will not create issues between you and the authority.
Jennifer Silber, a former reporter with the Juba-based City Review newspaper, calls the country's media environment challenging. Silber says she was among 8 journalists, security operatives detained in Juba last year after attending a briefing by opposition politicians in parliament.
If you are not strong enough, you are not flexible, you are not creative, and you don't have that heart of endurance, media works become very difficult. And as such, you will definitely quit the profession because nobody wants to. You know, there are people who don't want to have friction all the time with people. And they suggest to do something where they don't face those challenges.
Reporter Hannah Ayada with Minkaman FM, a community-based radio station in Lakes Estate, Awerial County, says female journalists have a harder time getting sources to speak on the record compared to their male counterparts because of threats, intimidation, and harassment.
Journalists should have freedom to express themselves, to cover those stories, to do investigation journalism freely without being threatened. And then also, I would wish women in this field of journalism to be given the space to express themselves. If there's a story they want to cover, let them cover it now. Give them the story. They are as important as men who also do journalism.
South Sudan Deputy Minister of Information and Communication Technology Jacob Maiju Korok told VOA last week the media environment is conducive despite few isolated incidents of arrest and intimidation. The media watchdog Reporters Without Borders says media outlets in South Sudan are routinely blocked from covering issues related to conflict, and journalists often faced harassment, arbitrary detention, and intimidation. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly kicks off today in New York. We'll bring you more on that after this break. Stay tuned.
WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly begins today, bringing together world leaders to discuss climate change and the conflict in Ukraine. I spoke with VOA reporter Peter Claudi, who is on site in New York for updates on the current situation and a preview of the week ahead.
The agenda for this debate is the focus on the climate crisis and the ongoing war in Ukraine. And as you know, more than 140 world leaders and government officials are present now for the high-level debate, which effectively begins on Tuesday. It's been a heavy traffic all across parts of New York, especially here in Manhattan, close to the UN. Some of the world leaders have been arriving, so you know they are blocking sections of the roads to pave way for them to go to several meetings that they will be attending. So that is the latest development here in New York at the moment. Traffic is heavy, but the climate crisis and the ongoing war in Ukraine, experts are telling me, will be the major agenda for this high-level debate here at the UN General Assembly in New York.
But like you said, world leaders have been arriving in New York for this session, and U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to be addressing the assembly sometime this week. What is the, you mentioned climate change already, is that the big agenda, the overarching theme here?
It is, and then the ongoing war in Ukraine as well. As you know, for those of us in Africa, a lot of African countries say that they bear the brunt of climate change and the crisis. And I've been calling on wealthier or Western nations to help finance efforts to cushion the effects of climate change on their people and their country. They often argue that the wealthier nations have contributed significantly more to conditions that have accelerated climate change or the crisis. So let's see how things will go and the resolutions or outcome of the debate on steps and the commitment of both groups towards combating climate change and or financing efforts to cushion the effect of climate change on these African countries. So it remains to be seen when they begin the high-level debate on Tuesday on this focus. And you know, a lot of African countries have also been complaining that the ongoing war in Ukraine has been having a torrid time on their economies. Some can't get grain, some can't. Prices of goods and services have shot up. Inflation has shot up in a lot of African countries. So a lot of economies are suffering as a result of the ongoing war in Ukraine, compounded by the climate crisis. So these are two major issues that these world leaders, 140 of them, will be debating beginning tomorrow, Tuesday.
And focusing on Africa, you and I cover the continent, and we know a lot is going on in different parts of Africa right now. What is expected to feature in African leaders' speeches and discussions? What are some of the burning issues?
Well, the key issue, like I mentioned, is how to resolve the ongoing war in Ukraine, because they know, and they have been expressing concern that the ongoing war is affecting their economies. And then the climate crisis, of course, COVID is also raising its head again. And a lot of them are, you know, worried that it could even shut their economies down like it did 2 years ago. So these are three key issues that they will be talking about. You know, I'll be sitting down with some of them to get some of other issues that they want to talk about. Now, let us also be reminded that this year's Sustainable Development Goals, or SDG Summit, which kicks off today, ends tomorrow, September 19, here in New York. It will mark a new phase, as experts tell me, of what they call accelerated progress towards the Sustainable Development Goals, with high-level political guidance on transformative and accelerated actions ahead of the 2030 target. And this is conveyed by the President of the General Assembly, which will mark halfway point to the deadline set for achieving the 2030 agenda and the Sustainable Development Goals. So these are key issues that are ongoing. Let's see what these African leaders will be talking about, because when in 2019 and before that, when it was pushed through, they embraced it. But however, some countries are not doing so well. Others are almost there. So let's see how things go here with this high-level week of the General Assembly.
That's VOA reporter Peter Clotty. He was speaking with me from New York this past hour. Still on climate change, environmental experts say rapid climatic and environmental changes over the past decades have led to social and political instability in Sudan, further fueling conflicts in the country over access to land, water and other resources. For VOA News, Michael Atid brings this report from Juba.
Experts say climate change is not the sole cause of the present conflict, which has its roots in global geopolitics and legacy of previous government. Statistics from a report issued in May by Practical Action, a British-based organization, show the alarming impact of climate change on Sudan, including the desert advancing southwards and a decrease in rainfall. Akini Walenda, the African director for Practical Action, says climate change has increased drought, high rainfall variability, depletion of water sources, and desertification of millions of hectares of land in Sudan.
The conversion of migratory routes and pastureland into farmland has significantly disrupted the natural balance and accelerated desertification. Human activities such as the expansion of agriculture, overgrazing, inefficient land management practices have further aggravated the impact of climate change.
Walenda says climate change and conflict create a destruction cycle that may have affected the situations in Sudan.
The effects of war, such as the destruction of infrastructure, displacement of communities, and the use of airstrikes and heavy artillery, intensify the environmental damage in Sudan. Addressing the environmental consequences of conflict requires a holistic approach, focusing on peace building and conflict resolution, and prioritizing sustainable environmental practices.
Awadallah Hamid Muhammad, an environmental conservation manager at Practical Action in North Darfur State, says human activities impacted natural resources and ecosystems, intensifying environmental degradation. Hamid says displacement of communities in Sudan has caused some environmental damages.
As the people are forced to flee their homes, they often settle in temporary camps or new areas, leading to uncontrolled land use changes, overexploitation of the resources, and increased pressure on fragile environment. The influx of the displaced people populations can also result in deforestation, soil erosions, and pollutions.
Hamid says the use of airstrikes and heavy artillery causes immediate destruction with long-term consequences for the environment. The UN Environment Programme says destruction of environment during conflicts affect public health directly in the immediate through air and water pollution. Is speaking to VOA from Kosti in White Nile State, Suwar Adam, who fled violence in South Darfur, says he lost over 500 heads of cattle last month. He says every year he used to take his cattle towards the border with South Sudan for grazing, adding that he does not know how his cattle are going to survive in eastern Chad.
It is very difficult at the moment to go and identify your cattle in such a situation. I am not sure if they are now being fed on good grazing land or not. This is the situation I am in now.
Walenda says Sudan's challenges require integrated solutions that considers the relationship between conflict, climate change, and sustainable development. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
And that's all we have for you this Monday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Kuzu's Clan and the song Binia Juba.
Yeah, still alive records. Binia Juba. Many men,
and in a mark,
cool bush, yeah, cool bush.
No, I think my dad's so cool.
Binia Jipa,
Binia Hilwa, Halatu,
Binia Tai,
Binia Tango.
mama.
Bini ya jipa.
Bini ya jamii. Wapando ruze hilo.
Bini ya jipa.
Bini ya jamii.
Anabikilo kia beka. Nagul mi Sudan
bini
ya tuba
bini ya tuba
bini ya kitiki yako bini ya tuba
bini ya tuba
hilwa 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 bini ya tuba
bini ya tuba
ya rabbi ble bini ya tuba bini ya tuba
bini ya
ana bifa mama
Babu watch and a ten alfat. Some job in a jiba ben nafsar wakat. Shook ya fa jamil ze meri matiyan. What be to? Bini ya be secreto. You be to? Ze miss malaika. She goes out and not every weekend. I like that. Believe me and she's mine. Bini ya jiba. Always you don't mind. In a bed you feed out ze wala la kumsa. Ana mao fi bed lay yo malaka. Real black whiskey she gives me flavor. I like it. Bini ya jiba oh shit. I like it. It's more like a Sudan. I like her. He looked a many men. Old Bajal, Mafi, if you bet not. Can index all now, call 004. Yeah.
Bini ya jami, wapa na ruze hilo.
Bini ya jipa.
Bini ya jami,
anabi hilo kia beta.
We've been listening to the Kuzus Clan and the song Binia Juba. I'm your host, Nabil Biajo, in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Hamza, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ana mashota bini ya hilwaze
bini ya jipa
zamana na rita fitupa ana shota bamba kulo hilwa
hilwa hilwa
o ya rabi ana basat nas hilwa so kani tukumsi batat itini.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to deepen bilateral engagement with the People's Republic of China, including in ways that advance U.S. commercial and strategic interests. Toward that end, Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo recently met in Beijing and Shanghai with several high-level PRC officials, including her direct counterpart, PRC Minister of Commerce Wang Wentao. Secretary Raimondo called the meetings productive, candid, and constructive.
I was able to explain our policies and our approach to China, and I heard from my Chinese counterparts. I was able to explain clearly that we will protect what we must and promote what we can. And that means national security is non-negotiable. But despite that, there's plenty of business we can do.
Business relationships between the United States and the PRC are to be encouraged, said Secretary Raimondo, but so is advocating for U.S. business and workers when the playing field is unfair.
I raised issues like subsidies, raids on U.S. firms, and intellectual property theft. Businesses need a predictable regulatory environment. We are not returning to the days when we had dialogue for dialogue's sake, but shutting down communication and decoupling services is neither in our economic or national security goals.
Secretary Raimondo said she and PRC Minister Wang created new channels of communication that will allow us to raise and ideally resolve issues. The first is a consultation mechanism involving U.S. and PRC government officials and private sector representatives to seek solutions on trade and investment issues. The second channel is an export control enforcement information exchange, a platform to reduce misunderstandings over U.S. national security policies. That's not a working group on export controls to seek concessions, said Secretary Raimondo, but it is an opportunity to share information and increase transparency. Additionally, the two countries will convene subject matter experts from both sides to hold technical discussions on how to protect trade secrets and international international property, and they agreed to communicate regularly at the secretary and minister levels and to meet in person at least once annually. The biggest achievement of her visit to China, said Secretary Raimondo, was just to start regular communication. You can't solve any problems without first communicating, she declared. And now we have to launch these different mechanisms, then see what problems we might be able to solve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.